Greetings, friends. Time to begin. The question has come up recently, and it comes up often, the meaning of awakening as far as the Buddha taught awakening. And there's a sutta called the Nagara Sutta where the Buddha describes what he awakened to and the struggles he went through to awaken. So the Buddha awakened to the profound understanding that it was ignorance, a very specific ignorance, ignorance of Four Noble Truths, that led to all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering. His very first teaching, then, was to teach the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the sutta that set the Four Noble Truths as the basis for developing awakening. The best description for what awakening means in practical terms is full human maturity. And maturity simply means that we understand who we are in the in life situations as life unfolds. We cease reacting to life because we understand it. We understand who we are in relation to it. And you'll see how that relates to the Nagara Sutta. This is a remarkable sutta, certainly because it's an awakened human being describing how he awakened, but it's also remarkable in that it's so often overlooked, and even when it's mentioned, it's not mentioned in the right context, and the Buddha really lays out what he would be teaching for the rest of his life. He taught for 45 years. Let me read the sutta and I'll comment on it. The Buddha was at Savatthi at Jita's Grove, Anatha Pandika's monastery, and there he addressed those gathered. Friends, before my awakening, when I was only an unawakened bodhisatta or bodhisattva, I came to the realization of the difficulties of the world. Even the beginning of this is so important as it relates to the Mahayana Buddhism and modern Buddhism in general, and the idea of substituting the bodhisattva path and the bodhisattva or bodhisatta ideal as a path to awakening, as even a reasonable path to awakening. The Buddha said on numerous times, referring to himself prior to his awakening, when he was an unawakened bodhisattva. Bodhisattva, in the way the Buddha refers to that, is a person who has great compassion for other human beings, but is lacking the wisdom, meaning awakened, for applying that compassion in a useful way for all humanity. So the Buddha didn't teach anything as an unawakened bodhisattva. He began teaching when he went past being a human being who was just imbued with great compassion, but now he has developed a wisdom to know how to present that and be usefully compassionate. The idea of just the notion, and I took the vow of the bodhisattva when I was involved in a certain Tibetan school. I since renounced it. But it always confused me, is what good can I be to delay my own awakening until all other beings are awakened? And even the notion that all other beings could somehow become awakened didn't seem reasonable. And so the whole idea became just a distraction to the path to awakening. So let me continue, but it's important to make that point, because it really is on that point that confusion and ignorance is maintained by taking that the ideology of the bodhisattva to heart. The Buddha continues, the world is born, it ages, it dies, it falls away and returns. But there is no understanding of ending the stress and suffering of aging and death. When will the world understand the cessation of the stress and suffering from aging and death? What an important question. When will the world understand that? The Buddha then continues, I had the thought, what initiates aging and death? Meaning, what's the cause? What is the origination of suffering? What is the requisite condition that aging and death are dependent on for arising? He's speaking of, now he's pointing towards dependent origination. From my appropriate mindfulness came a breakthrough of understanding. From my appropriate mindfulness, it's not just some generalized mindfulness. The Buddha is now describing how he has an appropriate mindfulness for seeing the nature of confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering properly. From my appropriate mindfulness came a breakthrough of understanding. From birth, as a requisite condition, comes aging and death. And now this must be put into context also. The Buddha is describing not solely physical birth, although that's a component of it. What's most important is the context in which this is taught, is that from ignorance, one can only give birth to another ignorant moment. And that is the process of setting in motion ongoing confusion, deluded thinking, and suffering. Then I had the thought, what initiates birth? What is the requisite condition that birth is dependent on for arising? From my appropriate mindfulness came a breakthrough of understanding. From becoming, as a requisite condition, comes birth. So this, again, directly relates to dependent origination and the ninth link in that chain, where it states, from clinging and maintaining, as a requisite condition, comes becoming. And remember that dependent origination begins with ignorance as the foundational condition for everything else to follow. So in that context, from clinging and maintaining to wrong views comes becoming, and that becoming is never... it never has a modifier because it doesn't require one. In other words, the Buddha doesn't need to describe what we're becoming because it begins with the initial ignorance. So from clinging and maintaining to wrong views, one can only become further ignorant. Unless something is encountered or developed that interrupts that chain, that 12-link chain of dependencies rooted in ignorance. Then I had the thought, what initiates name and form? Name and form, the Pali word is namarupa. It simply means that we are self-identifying with form. I've given a name to this form, meaning in a general sense. It's not that on my birth certificate my name is John Haspel. It means that I've created a strong self-referential view of this is who I am, and now I will do everything I can to satiate and defend this. Then I had the thought, what initiates name and form? What is a requisite condition for name and form? From my appropriate mindfulness came a breakthrough of understanding. From consciousness, as a requisite condition, comes name and form. Now again, the context is so important. This isn't some grand cosmic consciousness. It's consciousness, ongoing thinking, rooted in ignorance. So from my appropriate mindfulness came a breakthrough of understanding. From conditioned thinking, as a requisite condition, comes name and form. Now, this is really interesting here. Then I had the thought, the Buddha says, what initiates consciousness? What is the requisite condition that consciousness is dependent on for arising? From my appropriate mindfulness came a breakthrough of understanding. From name and form, as the requisite condition, comes consciousness. And there's the feedback loop that we all get stuck in that keeps us ignorant of our own ignorance. We from an inappropriate mindfulness, we've decided, rooted in wrong views, this is who I am. And we've placed conditions on our own life of what we need to be happy and what we need to avoid to maintain our happiness. Excuse the dog. Oh, he's going to bark a little bit here. And that thinking is rooted in wrong views and only continues to feed back on itself. That's the very powerful strategies that we all create to continue to ignore our own ignorance. And we place those views in an exalted place, and we decide that that's who we are, when all of those views are rooted in ignorance. As the Buddha would describe that, they're like foam on the water. There's no substance to them. Yet we continue to live our lives within those wrong views. The Buddha continues. Then I had the thought, this consciousness turns back at name and form and goes no further. Now he's describing being stuck in these views. It turns back on itself and goes no further. It is to this extent that there is birth, aging, death, falling away, and returning. Within that feedback loop of wrong views rooted in ignorance, the entire life experience occurs. In other words, the entire life experience occurs in ignorance, rooted in ignorance. There's no true meaning to it. Let me read that last line again. It is to this extent that there is birth, aging, death, falling away, and returning. To the extent of views rooted in ignorance. The Buddha continues, this is where ignorance is established. From self-referential views, meaning name and form, as the requisite condition. Let me restate that. From self-referential views, as the requisite condition brings consciousness, and from those self-referential views, consciousness is a requisite condition that becomes name and form. The Buddha is clearly describing how one continues to become further ignorant by being stuck in our wrong views. He's pointing to the solution. If we're stuck in wrong views, then there must be some way that we can develop to recognize and abandon those wrong views. The Buddha continues, then I had the thought, the sixth sense base, meaning the five physical senses and this consciousness rooted in ignorance, conditioned thinking. The sixth sense base is dependent on the condition of name and form and dependent on self-referential views. And this is the origination of the entire mass of suffering. It's the rooted in ignorance and identifying with the body. This mind rooted in ignorance is now using the common senses of a physical body, the five physical senses and thinking rooted in ignorance, to keep itself stuck in self-referential views. Of course, that is what could only naturally occur from self-identification as this being established permanently. Meaning, now, it's not just established as a physical body and self-identification with the form. It's self-identification with the form from views rooted in ignorance. And that's what creates the feedback loop. The body, in this sense, is just the vehicle for carrying that wrong consciousness around, those views rooted in ignorance. The solution, then, is to recognize and abandon those wrong views. Excuse me. Then the Buddha describes how the awakening started taking place. Vision arose, understanding arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose. Illuminating insight arose within me with regards to things never heard before. Excuse me. That was not a good time to take that drink because I want to emphasize this. Vision arose, understanding arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose. Illuminating insight arose within me with regards to things never heard before. That kind of lays lie to the notion that the Buddha was simply found something that's always been there, and that line is repeated in other places. Things never heard before, referring to the Eightfold Path. Then I had the thought: what is the condition that the cessation of the stress of aging and death is dependent on? He's speaking now and pointing towards dependent origination. From my appropriate mindfulness came a breakthrough of understanding from the cessation of birth, meaning from the cessation of giving birth to views rooted in ignorance. This is the most important part of birth. As the requisite condition comes the cessation of the stress of aging and death. From finding and recognizing our own ignorance and not giving birth to another moment rooted in ignorance, comes the cessation of the entire mass of stress and suffering. From my appropriate mindfulness came a breakthrough of understanding. From the cessation of consciousness, meaning thinking rooted in ignorance, from the cessation of conditioned thinking, as the requisite condition, comes the cessation of name and form, of self-identification, and name and form is, in a broader sense now, comes the cessation of all self-referential views. From my appropriate mindfulness came a breakthrough of understanding. From the cessation of name and form as a requisite condition comes the cessation of consciousness. Again, describing the feedback loop, the cessation of conditioned thinking. Now the Buddha describes exactly the path to awakening. I have obtained the following path to awakening, and this relates directly to dependent origination. You'll notice that. From the cessation of name and form comes the cessation of consciousness, ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance. From the cessation of consciousness comes the cessation of name and form. It's a mutually supportive process, isn't it? And remember the fine context. This has happened within him. It's not something that occurred in a mystical plane. It's not something that was given to him by grace. It wasn't something imposed on him. It wasn't something that was gained by any acts of typical merit. The only merit that is useful is developing the Eightfold Path. It is something that happened within him, and it's something that happens within us. We gain full human maturity. The Buddha is describing that. He's learned how to see the world as the world really is, without the feedback loop of wrong views. Let me read that one line again to lead to the next. From the cessation of consciousness comes the cessation of name and form. From the cessation of name and form, self-identity, comes the cessation of the sixth sense base. It certainly doesn't mean that we lose our senses. It simply means we stop using our senses to continue wrong views rooted in self. That's an aspect, we've given many talks on restraint. Practicing restraint at the sixth sense base, meaning don't use the senses to continue eye-making and recognize when it's occurring at the sixth sense base. From the cessation of the sixth sense base, and I'll put a line in here, from the cessation of the sixth sense base supporting ignorance comes the cessation of contact. And of course, it does. Again, it doesn't mean that we've lost the ability to think or feel or taste or any of the other things that we do with our senses. It simply means we stop using our senses in a self-referential way. From the cessation of contact comes the cessation of feeling. And again, this relates to the later developed or the later presented sutta, the Satipatthana Sutta, and what we do in meditation, in those four foundations of mindfulness, we learn that we first become mindful of the breath in the body to begin to calm the mind. And then we from that calm and well-concentrated mind, we're now gaining the ability to not be distracted by our feelings, and so to stop creating self-identity through our feelings. That's referred to here. From the cessation of contact comes the cessation of feeling. We're not reacting to feeling. We're not using our feelings or our thoughts to continue self-referential views. I hope that's clear. And again, this relates to awakening and full human maturity. We're simply seeing things and taking life as life occurs without the need for it to be any different than it is. Excuse me. From the cessation of feeling comes the cessation of craving. And another way I could say that is from the cessation of giving in to feelings, like a little child would want another cookie and just can't stand that it can't get its hand in a cookie jar again. When you recognize the impermanence of all those feelings and stop feeding feelings, stop reacting to feelings, stop living life from the constant distraction of getting what brings pleasure or avoiding anything that might be disappointing, interrupting that process then brings a cessation of craving. And the Buddha continues, from the cessation of craving comes a cessation of clinging and maintaining. From the cessation of clinging and maintaining comes a cessation of becoming. In this context, that's one of the most important lines the Buddha ever taught, because it points directly to the potential of each moment. If in this moment I can engage in this process, and I'll describe the process in just a moment in the way the Buddha does, then I can interrupt in this moment becoming further ignorant and the confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering that comes with that. And in this moment, I can point my mind towards becoming awakened. And that's the importance of understanding the meaning of becoming. It's the reason why I titled the newest book, Becoming Buddha, because it points directly to this critical point in the Buddha's description of his own awakening and his critical point in dependent origination. From the cessation of clinging and maintaining comes the cessation of becoming. From the cessation of becoming comes the cessation of birth. From this initial point, if we brought this process rooted in ignorance to cessation, we can no longer give birth to another moment rooted in ignorance. For most of us, that is a process of developing the Eightfold Path, and I'll talk about that in a minute. From the cessation of birth, then aging, death, sorrow, regret, pain, distress, and despair all cease, meaning the whole process of ongoing disappointment and unsatisfactory experiences comes to cessation. The Buddha continues, this is the cessation of the entire mass of stress. Vision arose, understanding arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illuminating insight arose within me with regards to things never known before. And that also points directly to the true meaning of insight. It's not something described in the modern insight movement, which has very little to do with what the Buddha is talking about. In this context, you can see clearly that the illuminating insight is to his own wrong views of self within the impermanent environment that he found himself. In this way, I saw a timeless path. Now, he didn't say he saw a well-worn path. He saw a timeless path, meaning that this path is just as relevant today as it was during his time. In this way, I saw a timeless path to be traveled by the rightly self-awakened ones, meaning if we're going to be rightly self-awakened, and that's so important, self-awakened in a right way, we do it ourselves. And what is this timeless path traveled by this rightly self-awakened one? Just this noble Eightfold Path. Right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right meditation. That is the path that the Buddha taught. He's expressing it here and describing his own awakening and how others who desire to be rightly self-awakened will follow. This is the ancient timeless path traveled by rightly self-awakened ones. I followed this path. Following it, I came to direct knowledge of the nature of stress. Following it, I came to direct knowledge of the stress of aging and death, direct knowledge of the origination of the stress of aging and death, direct knowledge of the cessation of the stress of aging and death, and direct knowledge of the path leading to the cessation of stress of aging and death. I followed this path. Following it, I came to direct knowledge of birth, becoming, clinging, craving, feeling, contact, the sixth sense base, name and form, consciousness, direct knowledge of the origination of consciousness, meaning direct knowledge of conditioned thinking, how it arises, direct knowledge of the cessation of consciousness of conditioned thinking, having had the experience, it relates directly to the third noble truth, developing the cessation of suffering, direct knowledge of the cessation of consciousness, direct knowledge of the path leading to the cessation of consciousness. I followed that path. The Buddha followed the same path that he taught others to develop. Following it, I came to direct knowledge of fabrications, direct knowledge of the origination of fabrications. Dependent originations, the first chain, is from ignorance comes mental fabrications or assumptions, false assumptions, wrong views. I came to direct knowledge of the origination of fabrications, direct knowledge of the cessation of those fabrications, of those wrong views. Direct knowledge of the Eightfold Path leading to the cessation of fabrications. Knowing this directly, I have revealed it to monks, nuns, male lay followers, and female lay followers, so that this undefiled life has become powerful, rich, detailed, well-populated, widespread, proclaimed among many beings. That's the end of the sutta. So getting back to the beginning of this, what describes an awakened human being? They are fully human. They are fully mature human beings. In other words, they understand the nature of who they are in relation to the world they live in, and they no longer contribute to their own unsatisfactory experience or to others' unsatisfactory experience. And how do we achieve it? With all the misunderstandings and misapplications of what Buddhist teachings really mean that have developed over the past 2,600 years since the Buddha's passing, he describes it so clearly. It's through the Noble Eightfold Path. And when anyone takes the time to actually look at and integrate the Eightfold Path, it becomes obvious that each factor of those path of the Eightfold Path is a holistic, a holistic contributor to developing the entire Eightfold Path. And there's an essence of awakening in each factor of the Eightfold Path. Now, and I'll conclude with this, the concentration that's developed in Shamatha Vipassana meditation is singularly important to support the refined mindfulness of the other seven factors, but it does not stand alone. And the meditation meditation method that the Buddha taught to deepen concentration must be developed with the proper context, as well as developing the Eightfold Path in the proper context. So we've just concluded a series of six talks on the Anapanasati Sutta. So those of you that are listening, if you haven't heard those talks or at least read the article, please do so, because it points to the importance of a very specific meditation technique, meaning simply being, no matter what occurs during meditation, to be mindful of the in-breath and the out-breath. And in relation to this sutta, you can see the importance of not being distracted by birth, sickness, aging, and death, and everything else that follows from that distracted mind rooted in ignorance, and simply develop concentration to hold in mind the entire Eightfold Path, beginning with an initial right view that an initial right view is simply the acceptance that my views are rooted in ignorance, a very specific ignorance, ignorance of Four Noble Truths, and let me now engage and develop the Eightfold Path as a framework for my awakening, so to develop profound right view, which the Buddha described, awakened right view, as a view that completely comprehends with the penetrative knowledge the nature of suffering in the world. And that penetrative knowledge, of course, is gained through insight into three marks of existence that we see very clearly by integrating the Eightfold Path. So awakening means full human maturity. It's certainly achievable for any human being that develops wholeheartedly the Eightfold Path. Mary, who was, we had a remarkable class last night with the class just talking about how they've developed the path. And Mary was particularly eloquent when she said that it takes them some right effort. You have to actually put some time into developing your meditation practice, developing and integrating the Eightfold Path, and being a contributing participant in a well-focused sangha. All of those are necessary. But when it's understood that this path leads directly to awakening, then the motivation is there from a level of joyful engagement with the Dhamma, because we understand that it will bring what we're all seeking for, which is a mind of lasting peace and calm. So that's today's talk. I hope you found some benefit, and I hope to see you again next Wednesday on my podcast. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.